if you've been to like the London Pride weekend, where their Pride parade is really big and expensive and it has lots of room for all sorts of communities to take part, but as a result it has a whole bunch of corporations who are taking part in that as well. Yeah. And there's only so many kind of like branded pens from Nando's that have a rainbow flag on them that you need, but the really tiny ones, it's all local community only, and I adore that. I love that a lot,
man. That's better actually, because mm-hmm. in the US I kind of feel like we only have the giant corporatized events.
I was about to say, like, I have mixed feelings about this, because when I worked at the Museum of Science and Industry, mm-hmm. we would regularly have a presence at the Pride Parade. And then, like, as time went on, I was like, oh, man, does MSI even need to be here? Like, why are we doing this?
Of the corporate things, like, I don't know. I think the Museum of Science and Industry is not very offensive. But right. as we start getting into, like, fucking
Chase
uh-huh. Bank. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, fucking yeah, yeah. Raytheon or the cops being at Pride. It's like, mm-hmm. You're specifically killing us, yeah. actually.
It was when I attended the London Pride March earlier this year, it was actually really interesting to see crowd responses at, like, floats kind of arrive. It's kind of like, you know, queer women's football. Everyone's like, yeah! Queer Central Africans who have, like, you know, moved to the UK and living there. It's like, yeah. Local bank silence. Fire brigade. Yeah. Just,
yes.
So the green hearts leap towards you. All they can tell is that there are two enemies in front of them, two invaders into the queen's forest. And they let out this guttural sound that is harmonized across all of them. Just, and all of them screaming the same.
Travis, we gotta get out of here.
Where's the axe guy?
I'm gonna say he's the one, like, kind of aggressively harrying you.
Okay, I want to try and use my bone arm to cut off his axe arm.
All right.
Well, it's 4 advantages, no successes.
So.
4 advantages, no successes. We return once again to the luminaries.
Oh, God. The river.
All right, so this suggests to me you could push this into a success, but it will present a personal risk to you somehow.
Does the queen currently know where Margaret is?
As far as your conversation went, no, because you don't know specifically where Margaret is right now.
I'm trying to think of some way where doing this would, like, alert her to something about Margaret.
You have all, like, right now, you have maybe already alerted to the queen to Margaret. But queen doesn't know where Margaret is. You don't know where Margaret is. And, like, kind of the thing that this despair made clear, the queen only needs one of you dead for this thing to work.
Is there, okay. Here's what it is. Mm-hmm. What are the things that Margaret, because Margaret can use some of my shit sometimes when she needs to.
Yes.
Can you remind me what those things are?
Margaret has your ability to pickpocket and I believe 3 uses of your animal forms. And I believe she's used one of them once that we know.
Because I'm thinking, like, what if doing this for, you know, incidentally, she uses one of those favors, which kind of, like, somehow, even if it doesn't alert me, alerts the queen directly to her location and makes it so that I can't, I mean, I'm not really going to probably be pickpocketing and I can't change into an animal right now. So that's maybe not that interesting since I'm not in my body. So maybe I take that back. But you know what I mean? Like something where I would be disadvantaged because she's using something of mine, but I don't have my body now. So that doesn't actually make sense.
Yeah.
I could just fuck Nathan, you know?
Well, so you want the risk to be that you are like somehow going to flag location for Margaret?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't have to if the queen really only has to kill one of us. And then I was thinking like maybe, you know, she just happens to use this time to use one of her favors, you know, not knowing so that I have less ability. But again, I'm not in my body.
Here's what I'll offer you. You could be failing this role, but if you take a risk, you could succeed at it. You could draw strength from your connection to Margaret. Margaret left you with a threat. Mm. And this is something that like kind of always exists and you're not always aware of it. But like the thing that we know about Travis Madigo is he, whether he considers himself a magician or not, is pretty good at kind of understanding different kinds of magic, picking up on how they work. And you are in this position where you are fighting desperately. You know you need to cleave this axe off of this person's arm so that you can kill whatever tree is currently housing the various green hearts so that you can defeat them. You know that it's important to do this, that like right now it's very clear you and Margaret both are in danger. So you could call on that motivation in this moment. But because that threat exists, there is a non-zero chance. I will draw a luminary just for myself to know whether or not the queen was able to track that and find Margaret's location, which could make the next leg of your adventure very dangerous. So if you want to take that risk, you can turn this like failure into a success. Or we can just like look to spending the advantages and decide that this is still a failure, that you can't get a clean swipe because there are still just so many jumping forward and swiping at you.
I think I like that better, honestly.
Cool, cool, cool. So I am about to draw a luminary and look at it, and that will be determining what is going on there.
Are you allowed to tell us what it was?
What was it?
Casey, I need you to cut this for the audience, but I will tell Liz and Johnny that the luminary.
Oh, yeah. No. Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't have to cut it because you didn't say.
We just made a reaction. Mm-hmm. Oh.
I didn't know there was a diaper luminary.
Yeah. It's full. Full wet diaper.
Well, that's actually just the pervert.
Ah. Gosh.
One of the NPC slots has been used up.
How? What?
Well, you killed some of them.
Oh, yeah, that'll do it.
So the remaining green hearts move towards you. However, somehow it feels like they are stronger as they strike at you.
Oh, no. Okay. Not that strong. Not from what I've seen.
Yeah, that is a failure, but with a lot of advantages. So actually those cancel out. So that's four advantages so far on the first attack. And oh, that is a meaty, meaty hit on the second.
We love a meaty hit.
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 So five advantages. I think what happens is they rush you two and separate you. So Gable, you are now surrounded. There are three of these things surrounding you. And Travis, you are being harried currently by two. It looks like just one at first, because like you are dealing with like snarling and snapping from this thing, and you are trying to use the bone sword to defend yourself and, you know, dissuade it from getting you, but lunging behind you, one jumps up and sinks its teeth into your neck. And Travis, horribly, and thank goodness you can't feel the pain from this, the teeth do grow roots like the rest of the body did. You are going to take 8 damage, but it's reduced by 4. So you're taking 4 damage.
And I only had 4, correct?
Exactly. So the way you will keep this body going is strain. You will be using the energy of your spirit to keep the body moving.
Ooh, and if you run out of strain, you could fall out of the body.
What's my strain? How much strain do I have?
You've got Travis's full amount of strain, which is... I believe your current strain is 11.
Okay.
Oh, you're fine. You're fine.
But Nathan will be experiencing, like, in Drop Dead Fred, when she takes the pills and Fred keeps getting sicker and sicker and he's disappearing. Mm-hmm.
This'll like be, like, more like the Chris Kattan role in Monkey Bone.
Yes, God. Monkey Bone is a wild movie, and Chris Kattan is very good in Monkey Bone.
Recently in the Movie Mastery podcast, they reviewed Monkey Bone. Better than, you know, you remember.
We rewatched it fairly recently, like within the last year. There's a lot of good stuff in there.
Yeah, that's like the impression that I came away with is like, it's not a good movie by any stretch of the imagination, but there's like...
There's stuff in there.
Neat stuff.
Yeah.
Our definition of a bad film has grown as a society, I think.
Yeah.
Like, as long as it's interesting, who gives a shit? Oh.
Brendan Fraser being in a film is enough to like put it over a line for me.
Poor Fraser, like Batgirl's canceled and Doom Patrol's going to get canceled too. So all he's got is this Scorsese flick now.
Oh,
better
God.
Be good.
Yeah, having to work with Martin Scorsese.
I
don't know.
He's from Japan.
Brendan Fraser for me is gold. Hollywood, if you put him in a thing, I'm probably going to watch that thing.
If they take him out of the Mummy ride at Universal, I'm going to be pissed.
What are they going to do? Put Tom Cruise in? First of all, they can't afford it.
There's rumors that they're doing a full
rehab.
Yeah,
but also I don't know. It's so good.
I know. At least 3 times a week, I say, "Where's my cup of coffee?" Like Brendan Fraser does on that ride.
Mm-hmm. Death is only the beginning.
That's so true for this show specifically. Let's keep going, though.
I think we have to go. I don't know what that's going to take, but I think... If we walk quietly and confidently away from the situation.
Does anyone have a clipboard?
Just keep on going. Oh. I can ask you this in character. Do we think our chances will be better if we can get the Forest Queen to actually come here and have a talk?
I think the conversation would be less physically demanding, if nothing else.
For both of us, for sure. Or we could keep trying, but James is implying that his special boy is going to get bigger and badder and is recovering HP, I think.
Not recovering HP. Okay. I will point that out. You've been so unlucky in your roles, Johnny.
I know.
Just wildly unlucky.
I blame the captain. If this were my body... We'd be done.
We would be in this situation.
I don't know.
This conversation is happening via
if you can add some urgency to the acting and...
No, it's just eye contact. Like, can we go? What are our options?
How do we go? We can try to run.
Okay, what are the rules that we know? What have we learned about the last time? How did we get out of the woods the last time?
I think I played a game and won or ran away and
we
cheated.
We both cheated?
I cheated.
You didn't cheat. You never cheat. That is an established thing about you.
That's true. You don't have to cheat if you know you're going to win.
We can flashback. You did win that Illimat game. What you lost was your ability to die. The Forest Queen took that in the form of an Okus. And you kind of, after you became the Changeling... sort of lived in the forest for years until it turned bad around the time you met Margaret, and it was clear that the queen disapproved. Margaret dies in the river. You are a sad boy underneath the rule of the queen for years before it comes to the point where you feel you need to steal your Okus and escape. And that's exactly what you do. How did you steal it and escape? What was that like, Johnny?
Well, I imagine that I... Do you think that she has... I imagine she has some sort of place where she keeps her trophies.
The Queen's Glade. The Queen's Glade is in the heart of the forest. And when we say the forest, we mean every forest has a path to the Queen's Glade. First, to get there, you must travel through a place where the roots and branches are so thick they're near impassable, through a space that is so dark that there is moss that has never seen the sun, until finally you reach a circle of eternal summer, where the queen keeps her throne, her game board, and all of the treasures that come with being the forest queen.
Okay, I think I have an idea. So I think what I did is I planned this for maybe years, how I was going to steal it. And I think what I did is I got someone else, maybe a traveler, maybe someone to bet their own real Okus in a game of Illimat, which I won. And then I did sort of an Indiana Jones swap of their Okus and mine, so that she would obviously know, but it would hopefully buy some time where there's like, you know, the magic of an Okus is still, you can still sense it there, but it was someone else's. And maybe that person is one of these Greenhearts, who knows?
Well, we do know that one of our, like the guy we played with is one of these guys.
These are all just enemies that I've made.
Just like, we could. So they all have human hearts inside of them, right?
In the trees.
Yes. In the trees. If we can just like find his heart, just kind of rip it out.
I would like to invite you to make a perception check.
Okay.
How do I do that?
Perception's not very good. Versus what?
You know what you are looking for. So I'm going to give you...
I think Travis would know how to tell which trees are the ones.
Travis
right?
is average. Gable is hard. Both of you get a blue die.
How many?
Looking at your perception right now.
My perception is pretty bad.
Oh wow, Travis, pretty good. One yellow, two greens.
Yeah.
It is two failures and three threats.
That's one advantage and one threat, or not one success and one threat.
Perfect, Travis. You start like you are dealing with the fact that your body is like getting tooth roots in it, which is not a pleasant experience. The general like fear of the situation of like being in a combat where you're not doing great, but you start looking for okay, in order to fell these green hearts truly, I need to know where the tree is that has at least one of their hearts. And you see it. I think there is something a little bit supernatural about this. You being the changeling and living the changeling's life, like the way your first plan came together, the elements that kind of fell into place that got you your escape, there is something similar to that story with you looking for escape now, and you're looking around this glade, and you can just get a sickening drop in your stomach as you know the tree, the massive tree that is on the ground that has its like fan of roots sticking up, is an object for these green hearts. It is a single tree that has the heart of multiple people beating inside it. Like you can like just looking, sensing magically, whether it is the fact that you are more aware of yourself as a spirit, the fact that you have some animal instinct from being a changeling, maybe this connection to necromancy you have being inside Orimar's dead body, you can hear the heartbeats now inside the tree.
So I know that it's just the one.
Okay.
It's just the one.
Just the one.
Would you still have that guy's Okus? Oh, no, you
not
switched
on,
him.
Not on... No, I wouldn't. And also not in Orimar's pockets.
No, that's true. Orimar's got different Okuses in all of his pockets. If you can tell me... like around where to aim, I could just throw a sword javelin style, depending how far we are.
Okay.
Damn.
There.
Role play.
What do you mean? We haven't been speaking this whole time.
Oh, jeez.
I know. Using our connection as friends.
Did you say that the tree was is fallen over?
It's a fallen tree. So this is like a massive tree that had like a wide selection of roots. And sometimes when a tree has been felled by like high winds or whatever, like mm-hmm. there's just this fan of roots. And originally, that was what the Greenhearts were using to create a facsimile of the Queen's throne, that like big fan of roots in the bottom.
No, I think that there are two ways, and you guys let me know which is cooler. I think either like right sort of in the heart of the roots, you know, you can kind of see a pulsing like right in the middle, or there is, you know, the tree has fallen over. There's sort of like a knot or like a hollow portion of the tree, like where you would see a cartoon owl.
Yeah.
And in there, so it's like facing up. So either Gable will have to javelin a sword or kind of come down with a sword. And I don't know what's cooler.
Yeah, I think it depends on how far this is across the glade.
You have been moving towards the tree line away from it.
Okay.
So it's like...
And which makes more sense to you, whether it's like in the heart of the roots or in like a knot?
Honestly, so I think the way that the Greenheart ceremony is normally done is it's put in a knot. But this is like kind of a special sort of experiment, you know? These are multiple people put inside the same tree. So I could really see it going either way. It's, I think it comes down to aesthetically what you want the fight to look
or, like. Well, I don't know if it's too much to summon lightning again, but it'd be cool to summon lightning right into a knot on the top.
I'm wary of doing more magic in general, and I can do ranged stuff for free.
Sure.
Free. But what I could do is like geometry throw up and then it arcs and hits straight down instead of like a boring arrow or something like that.
That's fun.
That'll be fun.
That's fun.
I like the idea that there's a lot of commotion and chaos and stuff, so it's more of a Hail Mary sort of.
Yeah, or up. And maybe it's like the knot is sort of the original heart, and then that kind of causes a chain reaction to the others. Because I assume one hit won't kill it, so maybe that hit will like weaken it enough that we can get past these guys and then start just stabbing at the roots and stuff.
I will say about these creatures, they do have hit points. This will. Either, I will allow you, either this will do some kind of damage multiplier or you'll be getting around their soak. It's and we'll say locationally, that's what it determines.
Okay.
If it's the knot, it's going to be like adding, you know, damage to whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is the tangle of roots, it will get around the soak.
Okay.
So up to you.
So then I'll say there's a knot in the tree.
Yes.
Where there is a heart.
Okay. Whose?
I don't know one of them.
Okay, what?
Oh!
And this is the point where it, like, bites down on him, starts growing.
Oh, roots okay.
Ah! Okay. Or you can aim for the roots. I don't care. Just go.
All right. Which one is involving soak? Which one will affect
I don't remember what he said. Just go.
All right, I'm throwing it. So that's going to be ranged, regular. My range is fine. What would that be? Like, hard? It's just... throwing.
Yeah, so this is you're throwing your greatsword, right?
Yeah.
First of all, I'm going to say that this is a regular greatsword roll, but it will have a black die because that's not normally how you use the greatsword.
I have done it to ring a big bell before.
Yeah, and I believe you had a penalty to that as well.
Maybe, I don't know. I don't remember. But I will add...
You add your berserk success to
berserk
this.
Berserk success. I'm also going to add duelist. I got a quick strike to it because I've not attacked the tree before.
This is very funny. I am going to allow this because I do like the idea of it being duelist because you've realized that many opponents are in fact one opponent.
Yeah.
Which is funny to me.
But just the two purple, right? And then
just
the black.
The two purple and the black. Yeah.
Great. This will be fine. So Gable will start to heave.
Heave, ho.
Ooh. All right. That is pretty good. That is two successes and one advantage.
All right. I'm asking you now.
Yeah.
Were you targeting the knot, or were you targeting the roots?
I think the knot makes the most sense.
Okay. And what is the damage on Gable's sword?
Greatsword. Greatsword, not Blade of Judgment, correct?
That is the Blade of Judgment.
Well, I have them listed here as separate. That's three.
Three? Okay.
Oh, no. Damage is four.
Okay. That brings us up to, with the extra damage from the vulnerability spot, 11 damage. Mm-hmm. They are still applying their soak, so that's going to bring us down to 9. But 1, 2... You are so lucky. You are so lucky. I need you to describe for me how you kill this creature.
For real? Okay. Yeah. Travis says, just shoot it.
And did you have advantages or threats on that?
One advantage.
Advantage? Oh, good.
At this point, so like Gable still has the flame in one hand and they've been using their other hand to actually call down fire. We've talked more and more about the blade being less physical.
Mm-hmm.
The way that this shakes out is just almost like a bow, an arrow. Gable claps two hands together and pulls back. And just like a pitch, like a fastball, just shoots it out right at the tree, throwing it as if it were a javelin, but you know.
It zips through the air with like kind of an unnatural curve to the way that it moves, and then like buries itself in the tree. You can feel these creatures like scream in agony as the blade pulses and fire starts to spread out across the blade. And therefore, fire starts to spread out across these beings. Great. As they once again let out one of these chorused screams. And they are consumed by the gold and silver flames. And the combat itself stops. And with that feeling of like immediate threat gone, Gable, you feel something else. You feel eyes on you very clearly now. You feel the ways in which that lightning opened you up to prying, searching eyes. And you did it many times. Mm-hmm. And you are now no longer under the thick cover of trees. You are in the middle of an open glade. You can feel yourself being perceived.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do?
So the vines are gone? They're like...
So the like in the area, the vines are here more or less, but the green hearts have been burned away. Like they are dead. You know, you can see the queen's former groundskeeper fall to your feet. You can feel the tooth roots that were embedded in your flesh kind of like ash up and blow away.
Like the mummy.
Like the mummy.
Not unlike our friend the mummy.
What does that look like? Do I see eyes in the sky or something like that?
So I kind of...
It's a billboard for an optometrist.
I see a green light. It's flashing in the movie.
You know how sometimes the moon is out during the daytime?
Yeah.
That's
like for perverts, yeah.
and sort of like Venus being usually like the first planet to appear in the sky, and it can even appear when it's still a little light out. It's the effect of like this, there is a star that is out during the day. And like we can see, I think this is like a thing that the audience is maybe privy to and maybe Gable innately understands but wouldn't be clear to somebody just looking up at the sky. You can see the morning star appears in its spot in the sky where it would be, and like we get a view of it that lets us know that that star is an eye at the center of light and fire, and you can feel it looking at you. You have, through calling the lightning of judgment down from the sky, you have this closer connection to the divine than you normally do. So you can feel through the faint tendrils of that connection, like the fact that you are seen.
Gable is going to wait for a full minute to see if anything happens.
Okay. Really important question. What do you do during this minute?
Just eyes up. Hey.
Me?
Yes.
What? What are you doing?
Just nothing. Hey, so are you okay?
Yeah, I guess. That was cool.
All right. If something happens, I want you...
What do you mean if something happens? That something
run.
Just happened.
If something more happens, I want you to run. You are probably going to be fine. But if nothing happens...
What, we stay here forever? We're going to run either way.
You can run. But I don't think anything is going to happen.
What are you expecting to happen? What are you doing? This is kind of a me thing right now that we're doing, and it feels like you're making it a you thing.
Most things we do are you things, I think.
I know. That's why this is so challenging for me, is that it's like, well, this was kind of my thing. We're in the woods. That's sort of my deal.
How much would you want to know?
I don't know. How long do you plan on standing here?
The star in the sky flares.
Okay.
And... what you would know if you had access to a very powerful telescope, it is descending from the heavens.
Oh, okay.
Right now, as we speak. Hey heroes, it's James, your Game Master, and welcome to the mid-roll. Heroes, I mentioned at the start of this arc that this is a big one. This is going to be a huge story that deeply impacts the plot and the show moving forward. And while I will never spoil anything that will come up on the show in the mid-roll, or undercut the impact of the dramatic performances of all of the people that I work with, after a discussion with the cast and out of courtesy to all of you listening, I wanted to remind you to brace yourselves for this being a very big arc. And also remind you that everything over here is under control and that we're going to tell you a really, really good story. Speaking of telling really, really good stories, August of this year, I have the Ultimate RPG Campfire Cards coming out. It's a role-playing tool designed to help you strengthen character relationships in your home role-playing games. And I am trying to make it a huge success. And the biggest way to do that is to get a lot of pre-orders on this product. It shows retailers that they need to order a lot of copies. And it shows my publisher that I am selling a lot of copies. And I want to do that because I would like this big, big publisher to publish more role-playing games. Not just books about role-playing games, but games themselves. And selling this card game is a big way to do that. If you head to bit.ly/ultimatecampfire or bit.ly/campfireRPG, you can pre-order campfire cards. And every pre-order goes a long way to helping me in my goal of making this a huge success. And to incentivize you to do this further, because I can understand not everyone instantly rallying to help me out, if you pre-order and email your receipt to contests@oneshotpodcast.com, you'll be entered to win the opportunity to pick the subject of the next Skyjack short story that I write. So, if you've always wondered something about the world of Sphere and you want to force my hand to tell you a story about it, you can. I'll be doing my drawing as soon as we hit 100 pre-orders. So think of how you'd like to shape the world of Sphere and head over to bit.ly/ultimatecampfire or bit.ly/campfireRPG and pre-order your copy. Before we get back to the show, a huge thank you to everyone who supports us on Patreon. We cannot make this show without you. Our Patreon pays for everything that goes into making this show. And again, I love this show very, very much. So thank you so much for this opportunity. Now, before we get back to the show, a word from our sponsors. And with all that out of the way, let's get back in the sky. Orimar Vale fights. To see Orimar, a person who has lived a long life and had a long career through the ways of violence, there is something of an art to fighting. This goes beyond even that of a career swashbuckler, as Orimar Vale has spent time in his life in the land of Galoda. Galoda, the place of sphere, where blades gather, where people test steel against steel and teach each other the true art of swordsmanship. We see this now, as Orimar, in his mind, stands against a fleet of blades, held by dark cloaks that strike out in whispers that bite with chill. He meets each with the end of his own steel, but he does not fight alone. Stretching from him is the spiritual essence and presence of Travis Madigo, a man who has lived 200 years and had to be in about as many sword fights. Together, these blades whirl through an endless sea of enemies that stretches on as long as the mind can comprehend, perhaps even past it. Yet, Orimar advances, taking hits as they come and striking back with a ferocity that these opponents have never seen in all their days. Orimar will press on. This is a thing that we know that Orimar has decided. No matter how many enemies, no matter how vast the odds he plays against, Orimar still cuts. And this is the scene that Jonnet comes upon, in a way or fashion. Because to Jonnet's eyes, to Jonnet's true eyes, which see beyond the illusions created by the creatures of this forest, Orimar still fights against unfathomable opponents, but they are not more vast than the mind can comprehend. They are the withered and desiccated creatures that the queen calls her green hearts. They are using the wicked instruments that they have at their disposal to pervert what the mind sees, to twist one's anxieties, to find the darkest corners of one's heart and bring them to life in a sick play that drags one down into despair. Jonnet sees Orimar fighting and blocking against opponents that have curled, clawed hands and skin as thick and tough as bark. But he also sees Orimar defending and fighting against opponents who are most certainly not there. Orimar fights a horde, but Orimar sees an army, and it is a thing to see Orimar Vale fight. A thing that I believe Jonnet knows he is witnessing, because to the untrained eye right now, it would be Travis Madigo in this fight. There's something unmistakable. Jonnet, I feel to you, even if it wasn't for your eye, if you weren't seeing the truth behind what your eyes tell you, you might recognize something of Orimar in this battle right now. His posture, his ferocity. It's unimaginable to find these things in Travis Madigo. Travis can't take his life seriously. It's hard to imagine that he'd be able to take each swing so seriously, that he'd be able to move with such conviction. And yet here Orimar is, in this living body, managing that with every move of his muscles.
It feels like there's a force that moves beyond the frame of Travis that you see. It's like as there is a shoulder barge, as there is a thrust of arm, almost a wall of air larger than the man you see before you pushes beyond. It's almost like you had Zangief from Street Fighter, but model swapped to be Vega. It's like nobody, a twink shouldn't be pile driving people this hard.
That's it. This man fights like a top and clearly is in the body of a bottom.
There we go.
I was... Yeah. No, that's perfect. I had some painting that I was going to do, but there's nothing. You can't top perfection. Let's keep it moving.
Yeah, you can't top perfection. Perfection also somehow a top. We see this, and Jonnet, you know that as fiercely as Orimar fights, as he fights with everything this body has, and more than it could ever have, you know... because his sight is twisted, this will be too much. If you don't act, this will be the end of this man. What do you do?
So, I think Jonnet comes upon the captain and sees that he is fighting the Greenhearts, but also is clocking the swings to nothing. And so it's like, oh, this is real. This is also perceived. So Jonnet's going to try to, like, put up a barrier or just like separate the captain from some of the actual Greenhearts. And so I think there's like a move to something like this has been done before with Jonnet, but like a twist of the, like a slight twist of like the ankle, like rotating your foot like in a sharp like 45 degree that separates the earth and it shoots towards the captain to just trying to like separate the earth and like part the captain from some of these Greenhearts.
Sick. Mm. I love it.
So if one were to roll that, it would be against...
It would be arcane, and I am gonna say... This is one of those things that's difficult as a game master to determine. I'll peel back the screen a little bit for you listeners, because what Jonnet is doing is friggin' wild, separating the earth. That's enormous. But in game terms, he's making it a little bit more difficult for enemies to get to, like, our allies.
Yeah.
So should I make it hard to represent, like, yeah, it's fucking wild to part the earth? Or should I make it average because, oh, yeah, you're basically costing a move action? Mm.
I have a question about the kind of, like, how sphere determines its element system, because that obviously varies from fiction to fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Does the earth of the ground and the kind of like earth as in trees count as the same category or not for Oof. Sphere?
I am so happy that you asked that. The magic system in Sphere works slightly different than our classical element-based system, mm-hmm. in that there is magic in the land, the sky, and the sea,
mm-hmm.
as there would be in blood, breath, and bone.
Gotcha.
Those are two mm-hmm. reflections of similar ideas. So in a living thing, all living things are made of blood, breath, and bone. And sphere itself as a living thing is made of earth, sea, and sky.
Mm. Then... as the Greenhearts are unto trees and therefore part of the earth, mm-hmm. maybe this is them being contorted against their will to knot into barriers rather than... so it's shifting the environment of the enemies rather than directly tearing a piece of earth out the ground.
I love that. I think that if that's allowable... Judge.
Okay. Here's the thing. In order to do a move like that, and I think you could, you would need to A, know what the Greenhearts are. Because if you know that, like, okay, these are beings that are connected to trees, I can kind of treat them like trees or demand the rules that are applied to trees be applied to them
mm-hmm.
Through magic. Like, that does work and make sense, but like, you need to know that thing about them.
Mm.
Otherwise, I think you are just doing like this opening the earth thing. So
let's start off with open the earth and we'll see if our good young man Jonnet can pick up on that
soon. I am gonna then keep this as hard.
All right. Oh, let's fucking go.
Yeah, that looks like a good result.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna like how this turns out. Okay, so that totals out to be four successes and a threat.
Ooh.
Okay. So the earth, like Jonnet plants his foot, creating a connection between himself and the bones of Sphere, and twists his ankle to rivet the earth apart. It moves aside, and we see something that we didn't really know about this place before. This forest is so ancient, has lived so long, that just beneath the surface of the soil that makes up the forest are an unfathomable tangling of roots beneath. So the earth pulls aside. There are roots underneath. This does do exactly what Jonnet wanted it to do in making this environment extremely difficult to traverse. So you've managed that. The issue is, because you did get one threat out of that, is these tangle, this lattice of roots, you now have to balance from ancient root to ancient root to navigate around this place.
Right.
But like your enemies unexpectedly, like in this, like do just fall into a pit and will have to, you know, dig themselves out of that. Nathan, in Oromar's vision now of what's going on, there is this endless sea of enemies. Half of them drop into some kind of abyss. And I'm curious, what does your mind make that abyss into?
Yeah.
How does it justify a bunch of roots?
I think as I am imagining the cutting stone being essentially what, like fragments of angels puppeting the remainders of human souls to do bits and pieces. I slightly misremembered.
That's not too far off. Mm. It is like what remains of an angel when it has been cut away to the essence of its being.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this kind of fragmented being that just has like a wanting and still has some sort of connection to its physical parts, but like can't really control them, you know?
Yeah.
Just that takes over a soul.
So with that, and I think that's the thing that has been explained to Oromar at this point. So I think we see these cutting stone revenants like lurching out towards Oromar and then crumbling into like powder blue sand and just descending and falling way further than what Oromar assumes to be the floor. And it's like it's vanishing into the void underneath.
Powder blue sand is such an interesting pull because lapis lazuli is one of the sacred minerals to the Rakshari people.
Mm.
And particularly ground powdered lapis lazuli would be something used in their magics. So I find it fascinating that Oromar settled upon that vision for this thing that has created relief in this time of desperation. Mm-hmm.
The thing is, though, upon seeing this wave of enemies just disintegrate and plummet, there is a glance off to the side. And I think we see like a small pinprick of golden light that is in the shape of an eye in the distance. But because Oromar is currently in fight mode, and it feels this presence of energy is in the space of battle, Oromar immediately locks on to the fact that there is a new presence. And in the real space, it's hard to call the forest real at this point, you see Oromar's head, but not, well, you see Travis Matigo's head, but not body, turn and look directly at you, and then just legs pushing off against the floor or whatever route he's now balanced on, and with absurd speed is now at melee range to you.
Oh my god, that's, I I love that so much. The idea of Jonna come like walking into a walking into a battle like, I'm gonna help, does a thing, takes four steps, and he's like, whoa, hang on, whoa, Captain in my face, or Travis in my face.
Yeah.
So you are just closing that distance, Nathan, or are you attacking?
There is like, I think does this kind of like break Orimar out of immediate illusion? Because I like the idea of Orimar launching in towards an attack and this illusion like tearing away around him as we then see the forest for what it is mid-swing. And just before impact, this hand angles itself and just skims the front edge of your nose.
I love that, but that's unfortunately not where we are.
Ooh.
Orimar does not have this illusion broken yet. The thing that we know from what happened with Gable and Travis is the illusion doesn't go away until you've dealt with the pollen or your perception of it.
That's right. John has his bandana on his face.
So I do need to know. I want you to make a melee attack. I'm going to set it at hard with a black die, and you're not going to know why.
Mm-hmm.
But
there is something in the back of Orimar's subconscious that is like, this isn't a target you should be attacking. Is this Orimar's fight or Travis's fight that we're rolling here?
This is going to be... This is... So it's Orimar's skill with Travis's body.
That's fine.
With Travis's brawn.
I will boot both of those. Give me a sec.
Travis, I can.
Okay, so that's probably pretty good because that means that you.
Oh yeah, Travis has a brawn of one.
Yeah, so I guess I'm rolling two green, if I'm to understand that correctly, against three purple and a black.
Yep.
Got it. Oh no. Oh no. Oh my gosh.
Captain. Punches.
If I understand this correctly, this is three successes and five threats.
What on earth? What on earth?
Thunk.
Wow.
Janet has a broken nose.
Yeah, I think you get like 1 inch punched into a tree behind you. Like you see Omar immediately go into melee range and then a force in your solar plexus and you go flying like, backwards.
It's like, Travis, I'm here to help you. You have to cover your...
Jonnet, you fall back and you fall against something that is both solid and soft at the same time because there were... five threats rolled as a part of this, and we do have to honor the five threats. Something solid and soft. You have the wind knocked out of you. You're a little disoriented. Everything about what has just happened is disorienting. You haven't fallen to the ground, though. You know, Travis is moving in these unnatural ways, at least for Travis. Something about your eye is helping you sense the truth behind this. And you kind of try to get a bearing for your surroundings, and Orimar, well, we'll talk about Orimar's perspective in a second. You look around, you try to feel like what you have run into, what you are up against, and you don't see anything. Part of you goes, it must be more illusions, like what I did earlier when I thought I was moving into a tree, but it wasn't really there. This is something that, you know, doesn't look like it's there, but is somehow solidly there. Until you look a bit down into your side, and you can see hovering in the air an eye.
Like a person eye?
Kind of, yeah. It's got a faint golden glow to it, just in the air, suspended. We cut to Orimar's vision as you can see above Jonnet holding him, cradling him from like the attack that you just unleashed. And I don't know if you can see Jonnet yet or what this looks like. I'll allow you to decide that. But bracing the boy's shoulders is hip.
I think it looks like a some form of almost like a pencil sketch of a person until Orimar hits Jonnet, and then Jonnet immediately looks like Jonnet on impact. And I think the kind of like, you know, psychological horror of having potentially mortally wounded somebody that you care about, I think fits within the over of this hallucinatory torture that the characters are going through. As that follow through occurs, you see shock in Travis's face. His eyes whirling so fast, they're almost kind of like a hazy blue-gray, then pupils darting around too fast, but still shaky hands kind of coming in and staring at them and staring at you and staring at the hands. And I think his... Travis/Orimar stares at you again, then sees this spectral form, or is it the literal form of Hip?
I think you can tell me from your perspective, but this is the literal form of Hip. Jonnet can't see it. Jonnet can only see what was done to Hip to save his life in a desperate moment. Can only see the touch of the divine sewn into his body so that only this eye is visible to Jonnet. Jonnet cannot see the body housing it.
It's like right above
him. Yeah. Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's from Jonnet's perspective, everything else is kind of invisible and unseeable and unknowable. Hip says, "Don't worry, I'll take care of this." And gently pushes Jonnet to the side.
Does Jonnet hear those words?
You hear a static hiss.
Yeah. Yeah. Scotty Jacks.
Hey heroes, I am traveling right now and I don't have the normal end credits for this show, nor do I have my dear Uhuru for this week, so I'm gonna have to upload that later. This is placeholder audio. Those things will be on this episode, but I just give me some time. I'm so sorry about that. Love you, bye! In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjacks role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more.